If at any point the plot gets away from us, Ollie, just give us a nudge, will you? And I'll try and find where I am.
I'm recording.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. And before we start, just to let you know, we did record an entire show yesterday. Unfortunately, the worst kind of pod bomb possible happened at tea time, so we've had to pivot somewhat. So it's hello again to George Colgan and Chris Woff. My intro when we recorded yesterday said a lot has happened since our last show. You can add one more thing to the list, but it's one thing that we really didn't want, George.
Yes, it is. Yes. I mean, it is. Is it the worst kind of pod bomb? I mean, surely sort of nuclear annihilation would be one step above, wouldn't it? Or, you know?
Well, I don't know. Judging by the reaction on social media, it's about on the same level, yeah.
Yeah, it's not fun. I mean, it's been a tough summer already so far in terms of like outgoings. And yeah, what you don't want to hear after all that is that Bruno Guimarães, the team's talisman, leader, tempo setter, wants to go. But that is what we're confronting with. Yeah.
And hello to you as well, Chris Woff. It feels like it's been ages since I've seen you, mate. You all right?
I mean, today has felt like an eternity, so I'm not going to lie, it's been a very odd day. George and I have been making calls, meeting up with people, and yeah, trying to find out basically what is going on. So we will try to relay as much as we possibly can from those conversations. But yeah, it's been a very, very odd 24 hours.
It certainly has. Right, let's get into the headlines then, and there's only one place to start. Bruno Gunshell. I'm sorry, I'm not... What is that?
It's meant to be Bruno Bombshell.
Well, that's what I was thinking. It should have been Bruno Bombshell, but why is it Gunshell?
Gunners?
Gunshell, right. Got you. Okay. I'm clearly not clever enough to understand that. Bruno Gunshell, Captain Fantastic, apparently expresses desire to leave for Arsenal. Plus, ciao, Sandro, and thanks for the cash. Tonali joins Spurs as well.
I'm supposed to do both of those in 30 seconds.
Well, you're wasting your time already, so get going.
Yep, go for it.
Right, Bruno Guimarães has told Newcastle he wants to join Arsenal. Sandro Tonali has left for Tottenham Hotspur, the other North London club, for a fee which could rise to £100 million. I mean, that's ridiculous to put those two together. Come on.
Well, it's basically because we've merged them because we had the initial headlines yesterday. And then just be...
It's like, you know, in a film when you get an alternative ending. Well, you've got to add an alternative beginning for this podcast, so you might be able to get that in the DVD extras somewhere down the line. Right, next. Incoming. Deal agreed in principle for Manzambi. Newcastle's secret mission to sign teenage sensation and not-so-big Baz is officially a mag. Tourist signs. Chris Woff, all three there. Yeah, you got three.
I've got three things there, George, yeah. So, Newcastle are close, hopefully, to agreeing a deal to bring in Johan Mamzambi. They've still got to do the deal with the player specifically, but they've agreed a deal with Freiburg in principle, so he is their top summer target. They've already signed Sean Sturt, the 18-year-old midfielder from Ajax. I believe that's how you say it, because he's done a video saying that. And then they've also signed Basmana Touré from Hoffenheim. That deal has been completed. We did talk about that on the podcast last week.
We did. And finally, Azteca conquered Big Dan Burns' big World Cup introduction, George.
Yeah, this is a bit more straightforward, and it's the best World Cup moment ever, surely.
Yeah.
Big Dan Burn comes on for England. England are in trouble. They're up against it. They're 10 men against Mexico's 11 in the Azteca Stadium. Incredible atmosphere. They need somebody to shore things up. Big Dan Burn comes on and heads everything away. What a legend.
What a brilliant, brilliant moment that was. We're all very, very proud of him. Right then, here goes take two of Pod on the Tyne. Before we get into the developments, let's check in on our Wednesday recording. Here's George reacting to last week's Tonali transfer.
Yeah, it's complicated. Sandro Tonali, it's complicated. I think Newcastle have got a good price. I think $92.5 million for Tonali, bearing in mind his troubled history off the pitch. plus the fact he's just gone through, by his standards, a pretty mediocre season, is a good price. Newcastle also got a good price for Alexander Isak, and it didn't do them any good. But there's the price. And of course, it's then the follow-up about what is then done with that money. And, you know, that is hugely important. But if we just take it in isolation, I mean, this won't come as a surprise because I've talked about it, I've written about it. I think, you know, this idea of players, I mean, forget how Isak to Liverpool happened. Let's put that alongside Anthony Gordon going to Barcelona. Now, I think in terms of both of those players, you couldn't really argue with the basic premise of those players wanting to leave or feeling like they needed to leave to either double their money, for instance, if that's what motivates them, or to be joining clubs who are very, very likely to be challenging for the biggest trophies and big trophies on a yearly basis, annual basis, or be in the Champions League. Newcastle, with the best will in the world, they want to be in that company, but they aren't in that company. And so with a heavy heart or with best wishes, you know, as is in the case with Anthony Gordon, you sort of say, okay, fair enough, we can't compete there. And I think this has also been part of the sort of club's message. It's like, okay, we can't compete. They leave. If they leave now, they will leave on our terms and we get it done. Spurs are not Barcelona and they're not Liverpool. And I'm not having a go at them. I am having a go at the way they've been run and managed and things like that. They've just finished 17th. They've just been finished 17th. Their position in the Premier League not confirmed until the final day of the season. They have been a shit show. They've been a mess. They've been chaotic. They finished 17th the season before. Yes, they also won a European trophy and played in Europe last season. But they are the one legacy Big Six club, if you want to call them that, that Newcastle could argue they have overhauled in footballing terms, definitely not in financial terms, but that yeah. They have overhauled in financial terms. It, I mean, it says a lot to me about Tonali that he's agreed to do that. I know there's a, you know, there's a kind of Italian connection with De Zerbi and so on and so forth. But it also sort of isn't that same thing. Newcastle can't say that they've sold to a team that they can't compete with. They are strengthening a team that they can compete with and are competing with and should be competing with to be best of the rest. And I do worry a lot about the message that sends both internally to the good players Newcastle still have, to us as fans, also to the rest of football. I've got really mixed feelings about it. You know, if just look at the footballer that we've lost, like at his best, you know, again, I said it at the top of the show, but like at his best, absolutely magnificent, a magnificent footballer, world class. I don't think that's putting too fine a point on it. Not, you know, not last season. And it also means that Newcastle have lost three of their world class or potentially world class footballers or international class footballers in the space of 12 months. So I have got really big feelings about it, and they're not straightforward.
That was a long answer.
I know,
that was a
long answer. Sorry. But it takes some processing a move like this, doesn't it? It kind of pulls the heartstrings a little bit because you saw what he's done since he came in, and also the fact that, you know, he did go through that troubling period. The club stood by him. The city stood by him. I was there that night when he came out in the Champions League and his name was sung throughout the stadium and he looked visibly emotional. He said thank you to everybody for standing by him while he went through all of that. I mean, I kind of feel like he doesn't owe us anything anymore and we don't owe him anything anymore, if that makes sense. It feels like that was sort of settled. That was all done and dusted. He was involved in the champ in the trophy win. He has put some amazing performances in a black and white shirt. But at the same time, when you see a player of that calibre leave to go to Spurs, it hurts. It really does.
He missed almost a whole season. I mean, yeah. When he was banned. And so, okay, you know, Newcastle won a trophy. They got back to the Champions League. That is, you know, that is a moment that will last a lifetime, whatever Newcastle go on to do. And it was the big thing. It's not quite the same as Isak leaving at that point, though. You know, he became a better footballer under Eddie Howe. I don't have any doubt about that. He showed his potential. I think that was okay. I mean, there's never, you know, Tonali's never come out and said, I want to leave, I need to go. He hasn't behaved like Isak does. He hasn't done any of that. But I don't know. I think in footballing terms, he could have made an emotional decision to stay and say, no, I'm not ready to move yet. And I don't think... it's very difficult to look at this from his perspective and say that this is a football decision. So that's the bit that hurts me, I think, from the player perspective. I mean, obviously, in some ways, everything comes back to Isak. I mean, I think once you've been burnt like that, you're not going to get hurt in the same way ever again, are you? Because there's like a sort of end of innocence feeling to that too. As I've said, I mean, I think it's really good money, but Isak shows you can't ever call an incoming check good business until you've seen what's done with it.
Yeah, so, I would agree with that.
And again, I think if you've lost Tonali and you've lost Gordon, it's very difficult to make the case that Newcastle will be stronger next season, whoever they sign from this point on. I mean, I think this is really important. Like, they can sign some really good, promising, exciting players. I'm excited. Like, if the idea at Newcastle is that this is what they do, that they are going to go up and try and hoover up really good, exciting young players who want to be at Newcastle, who desperately want to play, I'm all for that. Like, I am all for that. But that doesn't mean that Newcastle get better in the short term. And it quite possibly means that Newcastle get worse in the short term.
Yeah.
And so there does need to be that discussion, I think, about what Newcastle are, who Newcastle are, what they're trying to do. And I think, you know, there needs to be either some realism or a slight resetting. I mean, I'm interested to know what Chris thinks about this, but, like, you know, resetting of the club a little bit in terms of their strategy and who they're trying to be. Like, we want Newcastle to win everything. We want them to be great. But this is not the straightforward way of doing that, which is going out buying the best players for the biggest amount of money and paying them the biggest wages. This is a very different route, and it takes time. So, you know, I think Newcastle in the short term are weaker. That's something else I don't like.
No, I very much agree with that. I think this is a discussion for maybe slightly later on in the summer. Yeah. We can have a proper talk about this and see, then have a clearer idea of the players who have come in and sort of talk about that, because I think you raise a very important point. And in a footballing sense and an emotional sense, there are a lot of conflicting viewpoints that you can bring into this. Just from a purely strategic and also surgical approach to the sales that Newcastle have made this summer, I think that has to be relative to last summer, and with Isak, this is obviously completely the opposite. And before the first week of July is even concluded, Newcastle have brought in the best part of £170-180 million from the sale of two players.
Yeah.
You can argue the rights and wrongs of actually doing those deals from a footballing and emotional perspective, but from a business perspective of getting the deals done early and also getting high prices, because with Gordon, they got more than I think they necessarily benchmarked for him as well. And then for Tonali, they wanted a package worth £100 million. It is a package worth £100 million. I probably won't quite get that, but I think they're quite confident that they'll get somewhere like £96-97 million from the add-ons eventually. So the deal-making itself, I think, shows the evolution of the club, or the progress the club has made in that regard, with having the executive team in place that they have now.
Do I now have to react to my own reaction?
I don't know, do you?
I mean, wise words there from the Oracle of Newcastle, I would say.
Let's just go on to the Bruno stuff.
Sure.
Otherwise, this gets fucking weird. So on to Bruno Guimaraes. Fans of Christopher Nolan films might be the only ones able to keep up with us here. That's how we felt about the Tonali transfer this time yesterday. As we speak for the second time, now on Thursday at tea time, there's been quite a dramatic turn of events, hasn't there? What the fuck has actually happened, Chris Wolf?
Well, Bruno Guimaraes through his representatives, has intimated that he would like to leave and join Arsenal, who are seemingly interested in Bruno. But the problem, one key problem, is that Arsenal have not directly contacted Newcastle as of the time of recording, as of the last conversations that we've had. There's been no conversations directly between the two clubs. There's been no actual bid rejected as far as Newcastle are concerned. There's been reports of that. And Newcastle do say that he is not for sale, and certainly not for the suggested £60-65 million fee that is being suggested in some quarters that Arsenal feel that they could extract Bruno from Newcastle for. He is the captain. Yes, he has 2 years left in his deal, but there is also an option for a third year, which Newcastle can extend, similar as there was with Tonali, to make it an extra year. So essentially, Newcastle are in a strong position there, and they will demand a fee likely to be in and around that sort of Tonali fee if they would even consider letting Bruno go. So where we stand at the moment is that, yes, Bruno has intimated through his intermediaries or through some of his representatives that he would like to potentially explore that option, but as things stand, Newcastle think they don't have a decision to make, because there has been, not only has there not been an offer from Arsenal, there hasn't actually been any direct contact or engagement from them in that regard.
So has Bruno himself definitely asked to leave the club? I think that's what a lot of fans want to know, George.
Well, I mean, there has, you know, there's certainly been a conversation between Bruno and Eddie Howe. I think that's fair to say that. And I think... You know, I can't say that I know that he's submitted a transfer request or anything like that. And that doesn't happen very often these days, you know, these days anyway. You know, I don't think we're at the point where there's been sort of bad behaviour on his behalf or anything like that. You know, there's great respect, you know, between the club, between Bruno. And there's certainly a feeling at Newcastle at the moment that there won't be a repeat of Alexander Isak's behaviour last summer. You know, we know that he downed tools. He effectively went on strike. He refused to train or play for Eddie Howe's team. And there's no sense, as things stand, that Bruno's going to do the same thing. I mean, that's a pretty clear message from Newcastle. So that's where we stand with that.
Now, our friend Luke Edwards, Chris, reports that Bruno doesn't want to tarnish his legacy with Newcastle. Has he already done that with this, though?
Well, certainly Newcastle feel that he won't want to do that, and that he won't do the nuclear option as a do an Alex, as it was sort of put to us by somebody inside Newcastle. But has he tarnished it? I don't think it's tarnished necessarily. I think there's been has there been damage, certainly in the short term, to it? Yes, because I think a lot of fans felt that Bruno was somehow quote-unquote different. I had a lot of messages in this regard saying that I thought Bruno was different, you know, he loved the club. And it doesn't mean that the two things are mutually exclusive. It doesn't mean that he can't love the club and also have that ambition to go. I mean, George and I have spoken about it before, that in previous years, Bruno may have been at least thinking about possibly moving elsewhere as well. 2 years ago, when he had that release clause which wasn't exercised, he may have considered going if Manchester City or someone had really come in strongly for him. The captaincy was at least in part to try and coax him back round, to try and lift him a little bit, because I think he was quite deflated. Even if it may not have even been that he wanted to necessarily go, although I'm sure some part of him may have thought of that, but it's also the idea that he didn't even have the option to go because nobody came in for him. So I think that he will be flattered by the interest that's there right now. You have to remember, if you go back to the Johan Gabay situation, I mean, Johan Gabay refused to play for Newcastle, and then he did end up playing for Newcastle again. And yes, he left the following window, but I think in time, maybe it hasn't been fully repaired, but I don't think that most Newcastle fans have a sort of visceral reaction to Johan Gabay now in the same way that maybe they do to someone like Isak. So I think for Bruno to express maybe that he wants to explore that option, if he doesn't go down the Isak route and ends up staying, then I think that can be repaired, at least to a certain degree. Is it tarnish? Yeah. I think tarnish is too strong, but I think, yes, it probably has changed slightly.
There's a slightly different element to it, isn't there? I mean, Isak, I don't think I'm rewriting history to say that Isak was always a kind of a cool customer. Tonali's a cool customer. You know, there's a niciness about both of them. Anthony Gordon, we know, had his head turned a couple of years ago. That was always part of, you know, we always knew that. He was open about it. And I think that, you know, I think that meant those players' relationship with fans was always slightly different. We did fall in love with them, but I'm not sure we ever had the sense that they were heart on the sleeve players who were demonstrating their love for Newcastle week in, week out. Now, Bruno is very much that emotional player, leads by example, celebrates like a gladiator every time he wins a tackle. You know, he is our heartbeat. And that, you know, that word heart is very important. It does sort of represent who he is. And so as you know, fans, you would feel this more, I think. I mean, not necessarily about his worth as a footballer. You would feel it more because there is that sense that he's totally and utterly bought into what the club means and represents, and he's stood for it in a certain extent. I don't think, as Chris says, I mean, I don't think you would begrudge him the desire to do what Isak has done, to do what Gordon has done in particular, you know, join clubs who can fulfil his ambitions and possibly pay him more money. I mean, I think he is worthy of that stage. You don't want it to happen in a way that burns bridges like Isak does. So, I mean, I think we'll all be feeling a little bit heartbroken or potentially heartbroken today because he is a different character to those others that I mentioned.
To what extent do we think Brazil's exit from the World Cup might have played into this, Chris?
I mean, I think that can be overplayed a bit. I don't think that, I mean, Brazil's exit maybe has then led to possibly this situation unfolding this week. But I don't think if necessarily Brazil had been in for another week or two that would have changed how Bruno necessarily feels about this. I don't think Brazil going out of the World Cup has suddenly made him think maybe I want to go to Arsenal. So I think that can be overblown to a certain degree. I don't think I think the timing is perhaps the only reason why the connection you can make between the two. I don't think Brazil going out of the World Cup has suddenly made him change his mind and want to do that. I think it's just maybe that is why that has been communicated this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's more likely to have played a part is Arsenal expressing an interest to him or through his agents or whatever. But the damaging thing, or the potentially damaging thing, is Bruno looking at Newcastle United, seeing Isak leave last summer, is seeing Gordon leave, is seeing Tonali leave, and him thinking, okay, well, I'm as good as them, and if they're being allowed to leave, why shouldn't I go? I deserve to be on that stage too. I mean, that would be the thing that I'd be worried about.
Yeah,
that he sees his future away from Newcastle because of that. But I mean, I think you also can't underplay or shouldn't underplay the financial element of it too. He's 28, coming up to 29 later this year. Arsenal could pay him wages that Newcastle could not get near. Same with Tonali and Spurs in that instance. Same with Gordon and Barcelona. Same with Isak and Liverpool. Newcastle just aren't at that level yet. And, you know, how many more moves does Bruno have when he's at his peak?
Well, Newcastle are keen to point out they've had no contact from Arsenal as well, Chris, aren't they? Their position was that Bruno was not for sale. Is there any update on that?
No, their position is still the same in that regard. As I said before, they haven't had an approach from Arsenal. So it's not like they have a decision to make in that regard in terms of a bid that's come in. But they certainly do not feel that they're going to be bullied. If this is a situation whereby it's seen as a way via intermediaries, Arsenal, whoever it may be, is sort of trying to construct a situation where Newcastle are going to be weakened and feel that they would take a lower price, they're adamant that would not be the case. They pointed even last summer with Isak, and that although you can talk about everything that came around the deal, and we have regularly criticised Newcastle for the handling of that, they did actually get a British record fee of £125 million for him in the end. They have managed to get a deal worth up to £100 million for Sandro Tonali. They did get a deal worth up to €80 million for Anthony Gordon, and so they're going to drive a hard bargain. They have a price. They will not, they haven't revealed what that is, but they will not go below that. But there is a subtle difference between not for sale and he won't be sold. Newcastle will be strong on that, and they don't want to lose him. There's nobody at Newcastle who wants to lose him, but there will also be a financial tipping point. Every player does have a price. We've found that out with Newcastle. They're not in any financial need to sell him now. They don't actually need, or not required to do that, but he is 28, turned 29 later this year. And when George mentions the contract, a lot of people say, well, you need to give him another contract on pay rise. The reality is Newcastle are not only reducing the age of their squad this summer, they're also reducing the overall salaries they're paying. They want to be more sustainable within this UEFA agreement they've reached moving forward. And Bruno is already the top earner. They'd have to pay him more, and that would create an even greater discrepancy and restrict what maybe they could do elsewhere to keep him on that. Now, they may end up deciding that it's worth doing that, but it is also a big commitment to do that for somebody who's going to be 29 later this year. So it's Newcastle don't want to lose him. Nobody at Newcastle wants to lose him. But that doesn't mean that if Arsenal become very serious and do get to a certain level, then there is a prospect, there is the chance that he leaves. I'm not going to try and pull the wool over people's eyes there. But I don't think we're anywhere near that point yet, because, as I say, Arsenal have not actively engaged in any way, shape or form yet.
And if they do get in touch, Arsenal, they're going to need a bit of damn sight more than £60 million, surely, George.
Yeah, and I think, again, you know, I think internally Newcastle would point to the price that they've got to, you know, that they've got for Tonali. Again, the money that's being paid for midfielders this summer, Elliot Anderson going for a huge fee to Man City. That's another heartbreaker, of course, but Bruno is a couple of years older. He's 28, but he's absolutely at the peak. He's ready-made. He's Premier League ready. He's plug and play for a team like Arsenal. You know what you're going to get. You know what he provides. And he's absolutely at his peak, and they can afford him. And so, you know, whether Newcastle could get as much as that is, you know, is probably unlikely, bearing in mind that there will be limited sell on value. But that, you know, that has to be the conversation starter. 60 million quid, you know, does not touch the sides. I mean, that's not even the starting point for a conversation. So, you know, I would be saying that Newcastle would be saying, "Ah, you know, let's start talking at 100 million. If Arsenal got, you know, 80 million and above, then maybe that's something to talk about." But yeah, I mean, there's no way he goes for that much money.
Well, you would like to think not. There has been a bit of fallout online as well, with fans are starting to feel a little bit unsure of everything this summer. What's it done to the mood? I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've seen a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth and stuff like that, and I'm feeling kind of a little bit numb with it all at the minute. It's been nice to see a couple of signings come through the door. But I think I've kind of, now Gordon's gone and Tonali's gone and Isak's gone, I'm kind of just thinking this is the way things are now, and we have to kind of get used to it, you know? It's sad to think that way, isn't it? It just feels inevitable. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we've used the word sort of existential with Bruno, just because he, and that's something that, you know, that Chris has said before. And I kind of get that. I mean, the other players we mentioned have been huge. Isak, ultimately, Newcastle buckled. It wrecked their season. They've tried to learn the lessons from it this summer. They've been very clinical with Tonali, very clinical with Gordon, got it done, brought the money in. They don't have to sell Bruno, but it's, you know, it does lend itself to that feeling of like, okay, well, where is this going now? Like, where are we going? Like, and, you know, is this dream still alive? Is the, you know, big project, hate that word, but is that still intact?
I mean, it's hard to sell this dream now, isn't it? When you see all the best players that you've managed to pull together over the last few years leave, and the, you know, the dream you want to sell has never actually been seen apart from in the head of an architect somewhere. Like, this is, there's just nothing tangible to grab onto at the minute. And it feels a little bit like you're just seeing it all slip away. And I think because it's been such a great few years for the club, and things have changed and things have developed, you want that to continue as a fan naturally. It's the natural state of things. But the club might be taking a couple of steps back before it can go forward again. But it just feels like so much has happened all at once. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, yes. And so obviously there's been some good news happened in the last sort of 24 hours, and it's happening sort of right now, we hope, which we will sort of come on to. And, you know, like, I think there's something kind of quite exciting about this idea of Newcastle resetting, slightly shifting. It's younger, it's hungrier. It's like, in contrast to what's happened with those players leaving, it's people who want to be at Newcastle, who believe in the team, who believe in the club. Like, I can get right behind that as a sort of new beginning for the club. But they're then, with that, there has to be a sense of reality about where the team and where the club are. As you say, Taylor, it's like Newcastle will have lost, you know, bandy around the phrase world class, but, you know, Newcastle would have lost four world class players, or like really, really, really good players. Throw in Trippier to that too, and into like with what he's brought to the club and the leadership he's shown, and so you're talking about almost half a team of incredibly influential, talented, experienced, brilliant players either being moved on or choosing, wanting to go somewhere else. And then this expectation around the club that the team should improve somehow in the short term, I don't get that. Now, longer term, yeah, something new to get behind. We're all in it together. We've got this plan. It may be a bit more, it may be different. It may be a bit more difficult. It may not be the route that we thought that we had a couple of years ago. I can kind of get behind that. But yeah, I mean, there needs to be a recalibration and there needs to be an explanation of what this club is and what it stands for and what it's trying to do, in my opinion.
What could this mean for Eddie Howe, Chris?
Well, there's been an expectation that Gordon would go and that Tenali may well go, but the same does not apply to Bruno. And so in that sense, it would be extremely damaging for the squad that they're trying to rebuild, because a lot of the players Newcastle signing are young, and you'd be taking your captain out of that if he was to go.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't go, could there be a period where he almost needs a readjustment mentally? Does that what effect does that have, the skipper going around maybe not at sort of 100% as usual? How does that infiltrate into the remaining players within the squad? And yeah, I think if Bruno was to go, then Howe would certainly be looking at it and thinking, well, what can the expectations go to being in next summer? And those resetting of expectations, as George mentioned, I think there would have to be some of that, because you would have lost within the space of a year your four best players, and any side in the world would go backwards if you replace if you lose four players of that caliber. So yeah, I mean, these are all if, buts and maybes right now, but it would certainly be another blow to somebody who needs Newcastle to start next season well, and you've got far better chance of doing that if you've got Bruno Guimaraes in the side motivated and wanting to be there than if you don't.
And we talked about business getting done early as well when we were discussing Sandro Tonali. How important is it, George, given the disaster that was the Alex Isak transfer, to get this Bruno situation resolved quickly and ideally quicker than his run-up to take that penalty for Brazil?
Oh, well, in a more innocent time, like about three yeah. days ago, that could have been I could have done an extra time podcast. Bruno's penalty. I should just dissecting
penalty analysis with George.
Dissecting Clinton. Bruno's stuttering penalty. Just me repeating the word twat it repeatedly. I mean, yes, it does. I mean, to answer that question, it is important. But how can you do that if the club who are allegedly interested in him haven't actually made contact with you? So that is the issue here. And if Arsenal's ploy is to sort of try and sow a bit of chaos and confusion, then, you know, and they don't play ball and, you know, they're not having conversations with you, then I'm not sure how you take that forward. But obviously, as we know, Eddie Howe has had a conversation with Bruno. They've got a good relationship. They've got a strong relationship. He's not going to report back for training for 3 weeks. So, there's a bit of time as a cooling off period. But yeah, you don't want this to linger on. But, you know, as Chris said, if you can't definitively say, no, this guy is not going to leave, he is not going to be sold, you're, to a certain extent, you're in the hands of other people. They knew Gordon wanted to leave and they got it done. They knew Tonali wanted to leave and got it done. This is not something that they have prepared for. So it therefore makes it that bit more problematic.
Right, then, we will be returning to that story, no doubt, but that's enough for now. As George mentioned earlier, there is some better news, though. A deal has been agreed with Freiburg for Johan Manzambi, Chris.
Yeah, deal agreed in principle. It's not fully done yet in the sense, as I mentioned earlier, it still needs to agree with the player and still sort of needs to be ended up, but Newcastle have made tracks in that regard. They've gone to meet face to face with Freiburg. Ross Wilson and David Hopkinson have been heavily involved in this, and yes, Newcastle hope they can conclude a deal, but as all the way through there has been that sort of little bit of apprehension about whether Newcastle will conclude it, because there is a lot of interest in Manzambi, and obviously the performances he's had out of the World Cup. There's also, I suppose, the slight complication of the knee injury he has suffered with Switzerland. It's not meant to be serious, but at the same time, he still has to undergo a medical with Newcastle, and they have to then decide that it isn't serious and that it isn't going to be an impediment for the deal. They've been assured that it isn't, but at the same time, they also need to go through bits of that. So yes, it would be a hugely positive signing, this one, slightly different to some of the other deals that have been done, in the sense that I think he would be seen as being able to come into the team and immediately play. Not the finished article by any stretch of imagination, but some of the other players I think might need a little bit more time. Manzambi, we've seen the performances he's had at the World Cup that he can deliver on the biggest stage. And yeah, I think there'd be a lot of positivity generated by him coming in. I'm not saying that would fully temper any of the Bruno news right now, but I do think it would be hugely positive.
I mean, you know, as a standalone story, this would be a really exciting deal, wouldn't it? Without all the other noise going on around it as well. I think fans would be quite happy with this one. He's been really great when I've seen him play in the World Cup. And yeah, it's the kind of deal Newcastle wanted to get done. He was their top target as well. So let's see what happens with that. Right then. That was the latest update on Manzambi then, but two deals have been properly completed. We've already talked about the club's first summer signing, young goalkeeper Erwin Zouwen, on a previous podcast. Now Ajax's teenage midfielder Sean Sturr has become our third signing of the summer, following Hoffenheim winger Bazumana Touré through the door. Here's what we had to say about those two and some other bits and bobs when we convened on Wednesday afternoon. Incomings are afoot. Sean Sturr, that came out of the blue, didn't it?
Well, it did, although, I mean, I did trail on both podcasts last week, so both the main podcast and on Extra Time, that Newcastle were looking at midfielders as young as teenage midfielders, so the profile would be significantly different. But it did come out of the blue in the sense that reports emerged on Monday night in the Netherlands late on that Newcastle were close to agreeing a deal, which was then concluded on Tuesday morning club to club. And yeah, Newcastle are spending what initially is the best part of £20 million with potential add-ons on a player who's only made 25 first-team appearances for Ajax. So this is very much investment in the future. It's similar in one sense to the Zouwen deal, only Sturr is probably closer to being ready to being available if necessary come the first game of the season. I think the idea is that he would come in and probably be sixth choice of the six midfielders Newcastle usually run with, and that he'd have time to become integrated. But he is also someone who needs significant development, as the other players are saying this summer, and he is very young. So Newcastle have largely post-takeover, certainly after the first window, signed players under the age of 24. But to sign an 18-year-old midfielder to replace, and I use the word replace tentatively, a 26-year-old exiting in Sandro Tonali, because he isn't a direct replacement for Tonali. That pressure shouldn't be put on him. Yeah. But in terms of squad place, he is taking Sandro Tonali's squad place, and you're replacing him with an experienced Italy international, with someone who is, he's a Dutch under 21 international, but he wasn't even necessarily a regular in the Ajax side. So it's hopefully signing a gem of the future.
I take a bit of an issue with your question, Taylor, I have to say. I don't want to start the pod on an aggressive note, but you say come out of the blue. As Chris has already mentioned, he has trailed this quite heavily. And for those of us who do take more than a passing interest in European football, the youth talent that is around Europe is not a strange country to us. And particularly us football journalists, this is very much our world. It's our business. It's what we're paid to do. And I've been following Sturr for quite a period of time. And when I say quite a period of time, I'm talking about the 13 minutes since I looked at the running order before coming on the podcast. And I can safely say that Newcastle have bought a gem.
Good. That's what I like about you, George. You're just so thorough with everything that
Thank you
do. Yeah.
One thing about these things is that I love it. Chris has done this, but everybody does it. It's like when a team signs an 18-year-old footballer, you can't do a piece without referring to them as highly rated.
Yeah.
The highly rated teenager, the highly rated 18-year-old. And it just kind of always makes me smile, because it's like, it would be weird if, like, he wasn't highly rated, wouldn't it? I mean, it would be
the bang average.
The bang average 17-year-old that they have signed in absolute desperation. Yeah. But, yeah, no. So I can't pretend to know very much about him. I do love it, like, when Newcastle get linked with young players, whoever they are, and suddenly you'll find lots of experts saying, yeah, brilliant.
Been watching him for years, George.
We do know that Ajax is a great breeding ground for young players. That switch, however, from the Netherlands to the Premier League hasn't always been a successful one for Newcastle. It looks to me like he's got a lot of physical work to do as much as anything else. But
you got that in 13 minutes?
Yeah. I'm a quick reader. And as my headmistress says, I'm sure I've told you this before. No, head of sixth form said, the thing about George is he's very plausible. I then went on to fail my A-levels quite catastrophically. But look at me now.
There's no holding you back.
Failing as a podcast.
There's no holding you back.
I've got nothing else to say about this person.
Let's move on. So, Chris, what kind of player is he?
Well, I have done more than 13 minutes research, as you would expect of me, that this is my what I have spoken to people at Newcastle. I've also spoken to people who've worked with Stuart before, and George's point about the physical nature is actually a relevant one, I think, A, because he's 18, and so we'll need to develop in that regard, but top-end speed and generally physicality needs to improve. But what Newcastle do like about him and have seen in the scouting of him is that they think he has an engine that allows him to go basically throughout games. And there's been a comparison there, and this is not to put too heavy a burden on his shoulder as well, with the way Bruno Guimaraes gets into matches, that he isn't the quickest across the ground, but he will go for the full 90 and beyond and continue to get up and down the pitch. He's seen as either a number 6 or as a number 8, can play in both roles, very good technically, that have that dual role, I suppose, that Bruno has sort of played. So maybe you could look at him as a long-term Bruno replacement in some capacity in that regard. And as I say, he's not seen as the direct replacement for Sandro Tonali, certainly profile-wise. He will take his place in the squad. But actually, the idea seems to be, as George and I have spoken about before on the podcast, is that Lewis Miley will step in largely as that number 6 in a lot of it. And then Stuart will play minutes across the course of the season. I think what Newcastle seem to be talking about with Stuart is that although he's an 18-year-old, I think he's very mature, and they want it to be that he can have a sort of slow burn at the side. They don't want to introduce him immediately, but if they had to, I think they're confident that the way that he speaks, they talk about when you see the videos or when he's speaking, that he is a very confident lad. He believes in his own ability, and he will come to Newcastle thinking he can and should start that first game of the season. So it'd be interesting to see how he does perform.
Another player that Newcastle are pretty keen on, by all accounts, is Johan Manzambi. Now, he didn't play for Switzerland last night in the World Cup. He had a bit of a problem injury-wise. Well, where do we stand on this one, Chris?
Well, it's not just that Newcastle like him. He is actually going into this summer, of all the positions, Manzambi is their top target. He's the one that they really want. They've put a lot into this. They've watched a lot of him. It's not just been because he's at the World Cup. If anything, that has raised his profile beyond what Newcastle would necessarily have wanted in the short term. Although if they were to pull it off, then that makes it an even more exciting signing. And so may really help douse some of the negativity which was there across June throughout the fan base that we're seeing players leaving. But Newcastle are still trying to push on with this. It is not done yet. Fee not yet agreed, but talks have been held. I think we are sort of moving in that direction, albeit tentatively and slowly, and that gives it the opportunity that the clubs may come in. And I've had a lot of interaction with people on social media basically saying, why is it, you know, everyone keeps saying there's a lot of interest in him, but it's Newcastle's interest which is playing out publicly. And I get that. I get the concern there, because it does feel that somebody is trying to get that information out there. And it has been slow. It hasn't been as quickly as Newcastle would want. And this is, Luke and I talked about this in the podcast last week, that it's not always the case that when people talk about Newcastle should go out and do the deal, the problem is you also need the player to be the one to agree to that deal as well. And I think that Manzambi himself would prefer to wait until after the World Cup for that to be finalised. That doesn't mean that Newcastle couldn't get the deal done with Freiburg, and so that is something that they have been trying to progress on. But it's still in a delicate position, but Newcastle very much remain keen on Manzambi. They are looking at others as potential options, but he is the midfielder they really want to fill that number 8 role and really be the successor and basically say upgrade on Joe Willock.
And George, Chris said at the start there, he's Newcastle's top target. Are we feeling a little bit nervous? We've seen some of our top targets fall by the wayside in recent years, haven't we?
Well, that's the point. And I obviously made the joke about Sean Sturr and, you know, not really knowing very much about him. It's very different with Manzambi. I mean, I've been following him for 3 whole weeks. I mean, since the start of the World Cup.
Incredible.
So, no, I mean, he is a very different case. He's got pedigree. He's still very, very young in terms of his footballing career, but has, you know, I think he was named Young Player of the Year in the Europa League, things like that. He's had a big impact for Freiburg and is certainly, you know, is certainly being trailed and tracked by just about everybody, as any player in Europe these days would be by Premier League clubs. Newcastle think they've been at the front of the queue, but we've seen, as you say, Taylor, we've seen this with so many players. We've seen it already this summer, but we saw it repeatedly last summer, that Newcastle were gazumped, they were pipped to the post, they put in a lot of hard yards in terms of negotiations, whether with clubs or with players themselves, and were beaten. And so there has to be a sense of caution, particularly when, I mean, I know he didn't play in Switzerland's last game, but, you know, Nzambi has been doing it on the world stage in front of absolutely everybody. So there is definitely a sense of caution around it. As I say, the club think they have put themselves in a good position, but there are so many different agendas that go on during transfers. You know, the player himself, the player's representatives, the other club, other clubs who may or may not be interested. Newcastle, you know, desperately hope that this isn't, you know, again, them being used to flush out other teams. But until it's done, I think recent history has shown that, you know, being overconfident would be really foolish. But this is a player with genuine pedigree, and it would be really exciting if Newcastle could bring him in.
Just to jump in quickly there as well, Newcastle aren't overconfident, or at least that's not the position that they want and are trying to pursue it, but they're not giving out. I don't want this to be misrepresented as Newcastle. Like, when if it does or doesn't happen, I don't want it to be that Newcastle all the way through, like, this was going to happen.
No, that isn't the case.
They very much want it to happen, but that they're not presented necessarily in that way.
No.
Let's talk about Basmana Touré, Chris. Left-footed winger, very, very exciting profile, but he's also got a bit of rawness to him as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Newcastle went for Victor Munoz, as we have discussed at length, and they've now gone for Touré as actually the left winger they've been able to sign. Now, he's a different profile to Munoz. He is an out-and-out left winger as things stand, and actually a left-footed one rather than an inverted one. Newcastle believe in time he can also play on the right, and they would like to bring more out of him in that regard. But he is a throwback in some ways, that he is not an inverted winger. He is now an out winger, but he's also only 20. He hasn't got huge amounts of experience. Did well at Hoffenheim, has done reasonably well. They did okay at the World Cup, appeared in a few matches. But Newcastle have committed quite a reasonable fee for him. It's more than £40 million, breaking Hoffenheim's record for selling a player, taking over Joe Linton, previously sold Newcastle. I think it is exciting. I think there's a lot that he looks like he could really be suited to the Premier League, but again, maybe a slight adjustment period. So, with a lot of signings Newcastle are making, he's slightly different to Schouwen, but even more so, even Stewart as well, that Touré you could potentially see starting the games early in the season and being heavily involved early on, even if it isn't as he's coming in, or certainly of Anthony Gordon's capacity in terms of experience and what he will definitely deliver. There is honing that is required as well for Touré.
And it says here he didn't speak to Eddie Howe before signing either. I wonder why that is.
Well, I've actually dug into this because it struck me as strange, and I saw a lot of fans discuss this. And actually, the reason it's come back is that he didn't ask to speak to Howe. He didn't need to be confident. He wanted to come to Newcastle. I mean, he did say in his video that as soon as my agent came to me with interest from others, but once I knew Newcastle were there, I wanted to come. And it's often that players will ask to speak to the manager, or if they need to be convinced that the manager will say, I'll go and speak to him. And so that seems to be the reason why that he'd spoken to Ross Wilson, the sporting director, but he already decided he wanted to come. So that seems to largely be the reason why.
And it's a very, very small thing, really. And it's, of course, it's only words, but that is quite important to Newcastle, and it should be important to us as people who watch the club and follow the club, that we've seen big players leave and kind of want to leave. To have, you know, they may be players with much less of a profile at the moment, but to have people actually wanting to come to Newcastle, really keen to come here and excited about it, is really important. You know, it's important that the club are able to kind of give off that impression that they're a club there where players can improve and get better and fulfil their ambitions. We'll come on and talk about the other side of this in a bit, but it's, you know, I do think it's vital that some fans may feel a bit burnt, you know, with what's happened with players like, you know, with like Tonali and, of course, Isak before them. But, like, we want people to want to be here. You know, we don't want to be a stepping stone.
Of course.
But we want people to be here and to fall in love, preferably, but also to kind of get it and understand it. And so it might be a little thing, but I think that's, you know, I do think that's important.
What about any other incomings, Chris? Any more on the horizon?
Yes, well, I think beyond, I mean, obviously Manzambi is still, will it happen? But so Manzambi or another midfielder, particularly if Willett goes, which is the expectation. Goalkeeper is still a priority, signing number one. James Trafford is the primary target, but Newcastle are looking at other players around Europe, some of whom were at the World Cup, is my understanding, in case the Trafford deal doesn't progress, because it is a complicated one to do. But he would be the primary target, as we know, longer term. At least one fullback. Some people come back to me and say, well, what does that mean? Why do they want multiple fullbacks or not? And I think partly that is to do with availability of players, budget Newcastle may have left. If they do sign a fullback, is it someone who theoretically could play both sides, or do they need to? Can they only sign someone for either side, in which case they'll try and get two? So it's partly to do with just how the market will unfold there. Any more beyond that, I wouldn't entirely rule out movement beyond that. I mean, could another attacker leave and then somebody else come in? Could another midfielder leave? I mean, we're going to come and discuss Bruno Guimarães, and we know that the message is he's not for sale,
no,
and very
Chris,
much nobody.
No. I tried to put my foot down with Sandro. Look where that got us. But I tried my best to put my foot down. I said no. I said, okay, fine. Man City, fine. I'll allow it. But Spurs, no. And look, he's gone. We're not doing Bruno.
It's almost like you don't have the kind of authority that you think you do, George, isn't it? It's almost like that's all just in your head.
I'm not engaging with that.
But what I'm trying to say is that I think there will be beyond Manzambi and another midfielder, I think there will be at least two more, but potentially, I think somewhere between two and four signings still to come. It partly depends on outgoings, but that would be my prediction from here.
I mean, just again, some really, really, do you want me to react to my own words again? I mean, just some really, really wise words there from the Newcastle Oracle once again. I mean, I suppose that's how I would respond to that.
Good. That's going to get cut out, isn't it?
Wrong, sir. Wrong.
Right then, chaps, let's move on and have a little bit of chat about the World Cup. Wonder and heartbreak. George, big Dan Byrne heads everything in sight at the Azteca. What a moment that was. Amazing. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. I got back from holiday late on the Sunday, but not late enough to stay up, and I was knackered, and I was also injured. So I went to bed. I managed not to find out the score, and I watched the whole thing live, as it were, at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was just a great game that had, you know, that had everything, including jeopardy, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, the World Cup I found it difficult to get into until now. But it was just a great game of football, and then, you know, like, why is he taking Dan Byrne to the World Cup? I mean, it's like, what's all that about? And then I think it was you that said that on social media, Taylor. I mean, this is why. It's that moment. He hasn't come on for corners to try and nab a late goal. He's come on to do what he's good at. I was excited. I felt, as a Newcastle fan, I felt proud. As someone who knows him, I felt proud. But, you know, partially shitting myself, of course, because you don't want him to make a mistake.
Sick.
Yeah, I felt sick.
I felt sick when I saw him on the touchline coming on. I thought, oh my God.
Please don't.
And then the first thing he did was misjudge a cross, which bounced past him. The second thing he did was head the ball out of Jordan Pickford's hands. And I thought, fucking hell, come on. This can't, don't be the one who, you know, just come on. And then he did not put a foot wrong for the rest of the time he was on the pitch. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, just.
It was absolutely
superb. It was brilliant. Yeah, it was just a great moment. Great to see him there. I mean, Chris and I have been given a little bit of insight into sort of what's going on. He's not there as a mascot, right? I mean, that's really important. But if you want someone there to set a tone in training, to push everybody, it's like the same thing he's done at Newcastle, albeit he usually plays, but, you know, pushing everybody in training. He loves training.
Yeah.
He wants to be there. And if he can't play, he'll make sure that the people who aren't playing, you know, don't slack off. And we've talked a lot about this, about post-takeover, the people who've stayed at Newcastle, the people who've been around, and why they've been important. And he has that attitude. And you know, that is incredibly valuable. But he's also then been given his moment to show what he can do on the pitch. And I mean, I hope there's more to come, obviously, but it was just brilliant. It's brilliant for, yeah, it was fabulous. And it's like, yeah, he's ours.
There's been a few suggestions that he could be the answer to Erling Haaland as well as England play Norway in their next game. He has had a few battles with him over the years, hasn't he? And at times he's came out on top.
Well, yeah, I mean, Haaland's record against Newcastle is not actually very good, despite Manchester City always hammering them. Byrne relishes that sort of, that old style sort of physical contest, yeah, with his striker, a bit of sort of to and froing. So I mean, it would be interesting to see. And you certainly think that if England, would he start? I think that's probably highly unlikely. But could he come on again and be in that sort of scenario where if England are leading and Norway are sort of laying siege to the box, then who would you rather have than Byrne, particularly after that performance?
I have to mention the point blank range block of the overhead kick from Raul Jimenez as well, which.
Just puts his head in.
You're not getting
the stats were incredible, weren't they? He was like top of the list for like clearances and all that sort of stuff, despite only
blocks,
coming on in the
Everything. Unbelievable. Yeah. He was so good. Yeah. Somebody else who was pretty decent as well, formerly of this parish, was somebody called Anthony Gordon, and he stepped up, didn't he, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, he came on and changed the game against DR Congo, got the assists, and then, yeah, I mean, again, as a game that would suit someone, if that finale suited Byrne, then the sort of all-action, end-to-end physical nature of that game suited Gordon. But yeah, he stepped up and he was vital, wasn't he?
He certainly was. And we touched upon Bruno Guimaraes' future earlier as well, but in the present, we have to say he's got to be off penalties now, hasn't he? That wasn't very pretty.
Are you
going to
give him a twatting session, George? Just tell him just to eat yourself.
I watched it, and again, it's like, it's so weird. I mean, I hate those penalties, but you watch what happens when he does it. It does the little stuttery run, stops, and then there's no momentum behind his body.
That's it.
So it's like from a complete standing start, and I think you like telegraph it to the keeper where you're going, and you don't get enough power. And like when fancy penalties come off, they look great, and like everyone thinks you're wonderful. But I just like, I know books have been written and theses have been written about penalties and all of those things and pressure and all of that. But surely, hitting the ball hard into one of the four corners gives you a better chance of scoring a goal than anything else. That surely has to be the case.
But the thing that I didn't understand, I mean, Carlo Ancelotti came out afterwards, and I'm not saying he doesn't have access to these stats or data or whatever he was talking about afterwards, but he said, oh yeah, we'd done the checks beforehand and Bruno was the ideal player to take the penalty. I can't think of his, I mean, maybe someone will message in and say otherwise, but I can't think of a single Newcastle fan who saw him stand up to take that penalty and had massive confidence, because we've seen him do that. Yeah. Yeah, he has scored penalties for Newcastle before, but he also has missed
the
them in exactly
Crystal
the same
Palace
circumstance.
The Cup was very similar to that with a stuttery run up and then blazed it over the crossbar, didn't he? I have to be honest, when he stood up to take that penalty, I thought, no, mate. No.
I mean, it shows again that character is, though. He wants to be the one to take the responsibility. Yeah, that's exactly what he's like. But actually, if you step back and actually look at it as a who would you want to take a penalty? Whereas Anthony Gordon last season for Newcastle definitely would want to take a penalty. I don't think Bruno Guimaraes is close to being in that sort of, giving that composure and confidence to people watching on as Gordon did last season.
Yeah.
Just twat it.
Hardly a vintage Brazil side either, is it? But still massively disappointing for them to go out at that stage. So Dan Byrne is the final mag stand, and six Newcastle players have appeared at the tournament, which is a new high, overtaking five in 2014 and 2022, thanks to NUFC.com for that particular stat. Tino Livramento would still be there if he hadn't suffered that injury. Do we know anything new about that, Chris? Do we know how bad it is?
Well, not necessarily new. He did have an operation last week, which Newcastle say will be back at some stage in pre-season. They don't clarify exactly when. The squad or the non-internationals should be back at Benton the early part of next week. They'll be having tests to begin with and the like. But I don't think Livramento will be ready for the very early stages of it. So we're yet to see on that regard. Yeah, I mean, he's just had a terrible run of injuries, hasn't he? So let's hope that he can come back for a reasonable part of pre-season and get in decent shape.
And it's such a shame because obviously that position has been one of England's, you know, difficulties in this tournament. And so you would think that whether he would have started or not, I don't know, but he would have got game time, wouldn't he? So, yeah, real shame for him.
And of course, Jorn Wissa went home last week as well, which we didn't really get the chance to talk about on that crazy day of transfer news. Nick Voldemada had a very deflating tournament as well. And Malik Chow was a bit of a bit part player, albeit slightly less bit part. Anthony Elanga, however, did have a promising tournament, didn't he, Chris? He scored a couple of goals and he played pretty well, albeit he wasn't a regular starter for Sweden.
Yeah, we saw, I suppose, the qualities that Newcastle saw when they signed him, which we probably didn't see enough of last season, except on the very biggest occasions, maybe when the games are more suited to him, when Newcastle played against Barcelona and Manchester City and there was room in behind. And that's what I mean, part of some of his best moments came when Sweden were really chasing the game and were behind, and he was played through, or he went down the wing. And I mean, there was one outrageous bit of skill that he did on the touchline, which we certainly haven't seen from a Newcastle perspective. But hopefully that has done his confidence, given it a big positive boost and going into the new season. Newcastle need that. The message from inside Newcastle has always been that, yeah, second season he will be far better. I still think if Newcastle are moving towards a bit more of a possession-based style, if that is the idea, which we're still yet to see exactly whether it is or not, I don't know if he's exactly the winger you'd want in that capacity. But if Newcastle are going a bit more back to the sort of previous Howe approach of largely actually being in transition and counter-attacking, then that maybe is the way to get the best out of him.
George, your Belgian boys have to take on Spain as well.
Chup, Rode Diables.
Same to you, mate. Yeah.
Or Allez les Diables Rouges, if you like your language to be coated in a bit less phlegm.
Yes, absolutely. I have to say, though, as well, that is one of the results I enjoyed the most at this World Cup so far, was Belgium beating the USA 4-1. And it was absolutely nothing to do with your heritage or anything like that.
Thank you. Dankeville. Yes, what a... still such a lot of sort of strange things happening in this tournament. I mean, that was definitely the most controversial and weirdest. And yeah, for, you know, what looks like sort of presidential influence in who should be suspended or not. I mean, absolutely, you know, shocking. I mean, just awful. And I mean, whether or not it's got FIFA out of a hole or not, the USA going out, I don't know. But I feel sorry for the player, and I feel sorry for...
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I mean, you know, like USA fans, we've got a lot of United States listeners, and I was exchanging messages with some around all of that. It just, you know, just to have that going on in your head when you should just be feeling positive about, you know, your team, you know, having a good tournament as hosts, but... Just a weird thing. But yeah, thankfully there was justice in that result. It's difficult to argue otherwise, isn't it?
It certainly is. Right then, just a couple of things before we finish off. The Lasses, a double swoop for the Lasses. What do we know about this?
They've announced two signings so far this summer. Midfielder Hilda Antonsdottir. You've definitely just left that, so I would pronounce
that's exactly what I've done. Yeah, do you think I was going to have a go at that?
Who's an Icelandic international. She's joined, and also one which had been trailed for a little while, and it's quite an exciting one. Gemma Evans, the Wales international defender, has signed from Liverpool. I mean, there will be a lot more signings to come. As we've said previously, the Lasses and Newcastle United are going to push really hard to try and get up to the WSL for this season, because they want that ambition has not diminished.
Yes, and we've had news that there are two players pregnant as well, midfielders Morgan Gutrout and Emma Kelly, perhaps why we've strengthened in that area, an aspect of squad building we haven't contended with before on Pod on the Tyne. Congratulations to both, but doubly so for Emma Kelly, who is also engaged to be married as well. Congratulations to her. Right then, that's it for today. I hope you were able to keep up with our back and forths. Nolan has got a new one out, hasn't he? I hope it's better than Tenet.
Well, that one also Odyssey also applies, doesn't it? It's not just Tenet. Yeah.
Yeah, Extra Tyne has been a bit quiet in the off-season, we'll freely admit, but we are working on some premium content, as the kids in marketing call it, to get the juices flowing ahead of the new season. Podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm is where you can pick up a subscription if you want to listen to the additional shows when they
return. We'll be back next week with our main show as well, when Newcastle United's non-internationals will be on Tyneside as pre-season training begins. If there's any significant transfer movement in the meantime, you may even get yourselves a short bonus emergency pod. You can email a question to podonthetyne@gmail.com, and as always, the Q&A thread on our subscriber Discord will be open for entries. We still have an account on Twitter or X at podonthetyne. We are more active on Blue Sky at podonthetyne.bsky.social, and we are now on Instagram as well at podonthetyne podcast, and on TikTok at podonthetyne. That's it, chaps. Thank you very much for your time. I don't even know what day it is anymore. What have we talked about? What have we not talked about? What's happened? Has something else happened while we've been on air?
I have a nasty feeling that this is going to become a 24-hour rolling podcast, and we're never going to be able to leave this pod. Well, this just this podcast. We're just going to be constantly recording it and never publishing it.
It does say goodbyes on the running order, but maybe that should just be hello. Maybe we just say hello again and just
say hello again.
Good grief.
Oh, God. Johan Manzambi's put in a transfer request.
If this is an indication of how the next 10 months are going to be, I mean, no.
I think I might go back on holiday, to be honest. I think I might just go back on holiday. Right, thank you very much for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, we hope you have a good week, and we shall speak to you very soon, but hopefully not too soon.
Not now.
Take care. Goodbye.